everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and this is The Red, White, and Rude, where pop culture and politics collide. Never forget what Andrew Breitbart said, his words of wisdom. Politics is always downstream of pop culture. And today, we are going to talk about that specifically. When hosts collide, Elon Musk versus Chloe Fineman and the SNL drama unplugged. Then we're going to move on to poor Pina and Fred, murdered by the state of New York. The story's a couple weeks old. I get it. I just couldn't let it go, and I have to give my 2 cents on that. It's cruel, and we'll talk about it. Then there's something I call artistic visionaries, the dynamic duo who turned Stonehenge into a giant fruitcake, and the dilemmas with that. At what point do we sit there and not lock these guys up for years to send a message about destroying ancient artifacts? Then, are you aware that Bethesda Q&A workers went on strike for a day? You probably aren't, but there's a lot of irony in the fact Q&A workers on a game in today's gaming world went on strike. Then we're going to talk about two individuals who are back on, or rather who are, have begun their latest journey and send them off. And Tony Todd, the man behind Candyman's haunting legacy. And I saw the first one, you know, and that was my era. Woo, that one scared me. Tony Todd, a name you may not know, but a face you will recognize. Then there's everybody's favorite, or one of their favorite game hosts, Chuck Woolery, his life, legacy, and controversy when he came out. Not in the way you think. And finally, I'm a conservative. I grew up in a world of a patriarchy. Our world runs on patriarchy. Only in America and the UK and Western civilization are we destroying the patriarchy and, in essence, our countries. India is not. I am going to give you a movie review on Bagheera Unmasked. Actually, it's Bagheera Unmasked, a bold new hero in Kannada cinema. And I'll explain all that. I watch more Indian and Eastern, Far East movies than I do American movies now. So let's get to it. Before we begin, let me remind you, you can find this podcast, Red, White, and Rude, as well as other podcasts, such as my conservative talk podcast. I call that Fired Up. Just had a great episode on the COVID vaccine, the studies that are finally coming out showing how dangerous that drug is. How we're winning victories in court now. Talking about Lake and Riley, LA becoming sanctuary. It's good stuff, good stuff. You can find that Fired Up, as well as my Points on the Board podcast, where my partner Bill Ross and I have been tracking the San Jose State University volleyball game or team and the transgender issues. There's an emergency court hearing before the conference tournament starts. So good stuff on that. That's called Points on the Board. You can find our Libertarian and our NFL and basketball podcast. And we've got more coming too. You can find those at grumblingsmedia.com, as well as our social media platforms, YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, and Pandora. Do not forget to like, share, and most importantly, please subscribe. This is all volunteer work, and we do put a lot of time, money, and effort into it. And we hope you can grow with us, and we hope you can be part of that growth process as well. So let's get to it first, my friends. Let us start with, where is that? When hosts collide, Elon Musk, Chloe Fineman, and the SNL drama unplugged. Obviously, we all know who Elon Musk is. I don't know if he's the world's richest man, but if not, he's up there. So let's dive into what I call the intriguing and controversial world of Saturday Night Live. As a child, I was there at its great beginnings, saw its greatest years, and it's nothing but a shadow of itself. So let's focus on the recent revelation that cast member Chloe Fineman had an experience with Elon Musk when he hosted the show back in May of 2021. There's a great picture there of the set. Let me remove this. You can see it more clearly. That's one of the skits there. Not the skit I'm going to talk about, but where he plays, obviously, Mario. I'm not a fan of that game. I never played it. It was around when it first began. But there's Chloe Fineman in the top left. And Elon in the top right there, and Chloe Fineman doing a Newsweek segment or Weekend in the News or whatever it was called. So this incident has reignited discussions about the dynamics between high-profile hosts and the SNL cast. Here's the problem is it turns out the SNL team, they really just want their hosts to come in and do what they're told. They don't like hosts who come in with ideas or who may voice their opinions. But so you had the dynamics of somebody like Elon with non-famous people who have a great gig and the sensitivity in the woke entertainment industry. So, as I said, Elon hosted SNL in May of 2021. And in November of this past year, just this week, this incident resurfaced due to Chloe Fineman's revelation. So what was this? It was about crying. Elon made somebody cry. And then Chloe Fineman came out and said, it was me. It was me. Let me show you.
Okay, I just saw some news article about Elon Musk being like butthurt about SNL and his impression. But I'm like, you're clearly watching the show.
Okay, first of all, he was not butthurt. When people talk and Elon's been involved or has a comment to make, he'll make it. The problem, she calls it butthurt because he's criticizing the show. But he's actually accurate when he talks about the show has been dying. We'll talk about that here shortly, too.
Like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to come out and say at long last that I'm the cast member that he made cry, and he's the host that made someone cry.
I need a picture.
Maybe there's others, but I saw some articles and stuff, and I was like, I'm not gonna say anything. But I'm like, no, if you're gonna like go on your platform and be rude, like, guess what? You made Chloe Fineman, burst into tears because I stayed up all night writing the sketch. I was so excited. I came in, I asked if you had any questions, and you stared at me like you were firing me from Tesla and were like, it's not funny.
She couldn't take the fact that he thought it wasn't funny. That destroyed her world. And maybe Elon should show more tact. But the problem is men in that position, they're not accustomed to showing tact. And she knows this. She's dealt with her own share of other rude hosts. But she'll give them a pass because they're in the, quote, comedy and entertainment and woke world. At that time, Elon was still not woke, but he was a Democrat. At that point, Democrats like Elon were not Democrats in good standing. They were Democrats that were tolerated because they had a lot of money. They could donate. But Elon was not on board the woke crap. And that's what she's talking about. If you read between the lines, you know, I mean, in terms of how her feelings were crushed. You got to suck it up, baby girl. You work in one of the most cutthroat industries. Everybody's sleeping with everybody. Everybody's doing drugs together, which is very notorious and part of the culture at SNL. And no, I'm not saying that to hurt anybody. That's just the history has proven that. My only take is I look at her. I just had a conversation the other day. William, man, look at all those blondes. Y'all got a lot of blondes in the country. No, we got a lot of people who want to be blonde. Case in point, Chloe. You know, I don't understand. When you got eyebrows that dark, maybe do a little bit of the highlights in those eyebrows, I guess. I don't know. Or trim them up a little bit more. Chloe, you can look a little better on there. And yes, I'm just critiquing her because she is in front of a camera every day. And that's my right as an opinion. People criticize me. Well, you ugly. You old. You this, that. Okay, that's nice. You don't pay my bills. I don't sleep with you. I don't give a rat's ass. And that's how I would expect Chloe to take that criticism. And I'm saying this in a half jest just to get a rise out of the pajama boys and girls out there. She's fine. But it's just, why don't women want to be their own selves? Why do they want to be blonde? I just never understood that. Anyway, let's wrap this up, this video up.
I waited for you to be like, haha, JK. No. Then you started pawing through my script, like flipping each page, being like, I didn't laugh. I didn't.
So he's looking over it. What'd she do? Have him look at it. She wanted him to look at it and go, "Oh, great work. I'm sure I'll love it. You worked hard. Oh, man, I can't wait till we get this down to dress rehearsal or rehearsal." That's what she was hoping to hear. He looked at it like, "I'm not laughing."
Laugh once, not one time. Cut to the sketch made it on, and it was like fine. And I actually had a really good time, and I thought you were really funny in it. But you know, have a little manners here, sir.
Okay, she's talking about manners as she makes that face and is rude herself. She pulled this video down. I suspect she pulled the video down because she did not care for the backlash she got. We're now in an era where, all right, darling, we were the nice ones early on. Not anymore. We're going to push back. You are being rude there. He was being honest. You have a problem with honesty over your feelings. My sucky life is made up of my feelings, and I don't care about your feelings. And I get it. She probably admired the guy, liked the guy. You know, probably would have. I can't say that, but y'all get my gist. And so she came out. And all this started with that because somebody named Bowen Yang mentioned a male host upsetting cast members by rejecting ideas. So what was the media public reaction? Well, mainstream media, NBC News, Business Insider, LA Times, oh, poor Chloe. Oh. Musk's response was like, hey, nothing was funny until Thursday, you know, which means they had to work and rework and rework a lot of those sketches. And that's normal process. People think their stuff is funnier than it's not. I have my partner, Big John. He's a comedian at heart. You know, he puts out stuff, and I'm honest. I just didn't find it funny. You know, and then he'll work on it, and I'll tell him, "Oh, that was funny," or "This is great," or "Have you thought of this?" You know, because I want to make our show better, our website better, our business better. So that's how what Elon Musk was coming. He wanted to have the best show ever in SNL's history with him as a host. I would take fault over a tone, meaning if she was that upset about it, she could have come back and asked him, you know, "I just wish he had been a little bit more tactful. I admire the man, you know, I can buy that." But she's just a bitter hag. I'm sorry, I apologize. She's not a hag, she's a bitter shrew. A little bit about SNL. Dana Carvey's back on the scene doing his Elon Musk impression, which he really doesn't fit the role physically. But Elon came out and said, "Look, the show has been dying slowly for years." And it's true. I looked up the ratings. He describes it as out of touch with reality. That's true too. It's a purely leftist show. He commented on the political bias and portrayals. You know, "Hey, what did Dana Carvey?" What's Dana Carvey? I said, "Yeah, come out, be negative towards him politically." Real quick history. Ooh, ooh. Real quick history here. The ratings. 1970s was its heyday, about a 13.5 household rating, 78, 79. The Phil Hartman era averaged about 12.7 million viewers. Recent years, 4.29 million viewers. It's dying. There's going to come a point where the viewership versus the cost of the show, it'll be cheaper to just do low-budget news shows or reruns. But, you know, that said, they probably don't pay these comedians a lot of money, you know. Now, it had its bumps. Adam Sandler, Chris Farley era, strong ratings mid in the early 90s. The mid 1990s, a decline and inconsistent quality. For those who don't realize, the show started in 1975, so it is an institution. Next year will be 50 years. Congrats to Lorne Michaels, who has been both an entrepreneur, a creative genius, and a tyrant. Yeah. So Elon is not the first of high-profile guests to have issues with SNL cast. You know, there's always been debate on the comedy criticism and the sensitivity. In their defense, they throw all this together in a few days. But hey, you took up the challenge. Don't get mad if people want to be critics. You know, he's unlikely to be invited back. I get that. So let's reflect on this. It's clear that the relationship between guest hosts and SNL's cast is complex. And this will be an ongoing issue. When it comes to comedy, its boundary. And let's be honest, SNL has shaped the landscape of late night television, and they're not going away anytime soon. As long as they can keep those budget costs down, they'll live off of 4 million viewers. But it's a far cry from the double-digit viewers they had in their day. So let's talk about something that really pains me here. Really, really, truly pains me when I first saw the story. Let's talk Peanut and Fred, who were murdered by the state of New York because somebody had a hair up their tush. So Peanut the squirrel, as you see there, it's a cute little squirrel. You see him in the bottom too. He was a beloved pet with nearly 600,000 followers on Instagram and TikTok. The individual's name there in the bottom right is Mark Longo. He rescued Peanut 7 years ago after the squirrel's mother was hit by a car. Then there's Fred the raccoon, the first two. These were domesticated animals. Didn't have rabies, weren't causing any problems. And somebody anonymously reported them for hate. That was it. Peanut became the mascot of Peanuts Freedom Farm, a nonprofit animal sanctuary caring for over 300 animals. The cost of care for that many animals is astronomical. And it saddens me. On October 30th of this past year, the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, DEC, confiscated Peanut and Fred from Longo's home. They cited multiple anonymous complaints about illegal wildlife keeping and potential public safety risks. First of all, there were no potential public safety risks. Let us be clear on that. None. There were at least six DEC officers that conducted the raid, searching the entire property. He was forced to sit outside for 5 hours during the investigation. They were out to get this guy. And then they lied. They flat out lied by saying that Peanut bit one of their investigating officers. But hey, lo and behold, no pictures, no nothing, no proof. All you have to do is show the finger or whatever. And they're saying that alleged bite is what triggered the rabies testing protocols. They wanted to kill these guys. They didn't like this guy. There's no proof of bites, as I said. There was no publicly available evidence, as I said. Now, some people say, well, damn, that doesn't mean he didn't get bit. Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. When there is no transparency in government, it's for a reason. They're hiding something, not showing the truth, or just flat out lying. In this case, it was flat out lying. The anonymous tips, they acted off of anonymous tips. No, they didn't. They saw this guy online, didn't like what he was saying, and they went after him. Anonymous tips are common, but they could have easily seen online, hey, these guys aren't causing any problem. They should have gone there with an unbiased point of view. Instead, they went out there to get him. And a search warrant? They got a search warrant. How excessive is that? So it wasn't like they had an orangutan there or a lion there. It was a raccoon and a freaking squirrel. There was no evidence to justify the DEC's actions. This is big government. This is libertarian in me coming out now. These men, every single one of them, need to be strung up. Give them a lashing once or twice. See how they like it. See if they go into another home. Now, I don't really mean that. It's just my anger coming out. Because these are defenseless creatures that we as humans who can think and feel and have emotion threw all that out the window. They said, we're just going to kill him because we don't like the guy, Mark Longo. Both Peanut and Fred were euthanized, with Peanut being decapitated for rabies testing. Neither one had rabies. Oh, Lombo, you couldn't figure that one out? With all the videos that were up to date daily, literally. I get the wildlife ownership situation, but look, people, let's be real. There's times where there are exceptions. This was clearly an exception. The guy had tons of video and film on these two creatures. Or rather, there was video on these two creatures. Now they're going to announce, well, we're going to have an internal review. You know what? Well, they need to be sued. And if necessary, the federal government needs to step in and do what they can to punish them. No different than the Rodney King incident. How dare you, William? How dare you? So bad compare Rodney King, a man so high on PCP, it took 5 officers to take him down. And it caused race riots. From a drug-infested George Floyd precursor. Yeah, I wasn't a fan of Rodney King either. I'm not comparing Rodney King the human to him. I'm comparing how the federal government stepped in. Federal government can step in here. Obama had him step in to usurp illegally and put federal governments in charge of police precincts. Why? They want them woke. They want them dismantled. They wanted to take control over them. Government's about control. These men need to be punished. And women, whoever was involved. There was political public response. I mean, everyone from Elon Musk to the Everyday Joe supported Longo. And yes, I'm part of that criticizing government intervention. Congressman Nick Langworthy criticized the DEC's priorities. Well, Congressman, how about following up and doing something about it? Social media erupted with memes and public outrage, as it should have. He was in the process long ago of obtaining educational animal certification. He was going to use these for education. Talk to kids with, talk about animals, you know, help use the money they raise because of the popularity to help save and nurture other animals. This is no different of the abuse that Cuomo, Mario Cuomo, or Governor Cuomo, you know, Chris Cuomo's pajama boy brother, and having a boat Trump sent up there. Hey, put all the COVID people here. You can use it. Instead, he put them in restrooms, and they created rules where they died alone, miserable. Cuomo has blood on his hands, too. That's a separate issue. Chris is a bigot of a brother. He's just a loser, steroid. I don't know if he takes steroids, but that guy's so stuck on himself. He probably stares at himself naked in the mirror every day. I gotta give Chris Cuomo credit. The guy gets defeated on every debate. The guy can't debate to save his life, but he's so full of himself. He thinks, I look good here. You know, no, you're a 50-year-old wannabe. Actually, he's very successful. But without Longo, without Peanut, Longo Sanctuary is eventually going to die. Peanut was a big instrumental. It could have raised a lot of money. That was a whole focal point of success for him. And they purposely took that away. Now, they still want to go after Longo. They discovered an unregistered rifle with a shorter barrel than legal limits. It lacked a stock, classifying it as business. I mean, just bullshit. He didn't have the permits for it. You know, the police permits, I'm a big-time gun advocate. I was born and raised in Panama as an American citizen. I've seen what happens when they take guns away from you. Every country has history of that. All this is about control and money. Well, we can't take your guns because of that damn stupid Second Amendment, that damn stupid Constitution. We're going to tax the hell out of you. They've not made a decision on this. It's all disgusting. So what are we left with? We're left with a government that abuses power to murder two defenseless animals who are still abusing their power. They hold over the head for Longo. See, here's what they're doing. They're holding that over his head. Well, you know, we don't need you coming at us legally. So because of that, we won't press any charges if you don't sign and don't come after us legally. That's what this is about. God bless you, Peanut and Fred. And then God bless Mark Longo there. We live in an effed up world. And some more effed up stuff. Let's get to Stonehenge. This is what I call the artistic visionaries, the dynamic duo who turned Stonehenge into a giant fruitcake. This is disgusting also. Look at these two. Those two on the far on the lower right. Obviously, Rajan Naidu is 73 and Yam Lynch is 22. They've both been charged for spraying orange paint powder, it's cornflower, at Stonehenge this past June. They're finally charged. Look at that. You see in the top right there? There's Stonehenge on the left, very familiar, worldwide known icon. There they are, proudly sitting there. Well, they were arrested. They faced charges of destroying or damaging an ancient monument, protected monument, and intentionally or recklessly causing a public nuisance. They're going to be seen in court on December 13th. The problem is these people never get hard time. And they need, it's happening so frequently, it's a matter of time. Their time is indeed running out. Again, they're scheduled to appear in court on December 13th at the Salisbury Magistrates Court. The protest was claimed by the environmentally group Just Stop Oil. Look at those shoes. They're made of oil. That shirt, made of oil. That band he's wearing. Their bands are wearing, made of oil. Those glasses, made of oil. Hell, probably the hair gel the old man's using is probably made of oil. That necklace he's wearing probably has oil in terms of the fish wire type band holding it all together. If they truly were against oil, they sure as hell wouldn't wear oil. This reminds me of the commercial. See the guy driving up his big old black SUV, big SUV. Nicely dressed suit, not suit, but blazer, pants, everything you can tell as well. Pulls out his flip phone. I've got a project for us to save. Sierra Group, here to save the world. I mean, the cars, everything there deals with oil. The phone is it's oil. You know, it's like all the tools they use is what they're supposedly fighting. If you truly believe in it, stay away from everything. If that means you have to make your own clothes through cotton, then do it, by God. If that means you got to walk, build your bicycle with no oil used for the sprockets, etc., do it. But they won't. Now, do use fire extinguisher to spray the paint while Lynch sprayed three stones before being stopped. Again, the paint was made from cornstarch and it'll dissolve in rain. So it's nuisance, but things are always taken to the next step. They took a step back. They were smart. Like, yeah, we're not going to get the big time prosecution because this will come off with just water. It's not the point. The act has been met with with criticism from political leaders, as well as people like myself. Stonehenge is a UNESCO. You know, I see that for decades. I remember how to pronounce it until today. It's a World Heritage Site with a history dating back about 5,000 years. My point in showing this is starting to happen to paintings. It's classic with paintings all the time. It's starting to happen to artifacts on the outside. There's going to come a point where they're going to completely destroy one. It's going to come a point they're going to destroy one or be in the process and somebody's going to kill them. Nothing good is going to come from this. Nothing. And they don't seem to want nor care to understand that. So we've talked about the murder of Peanut, woke Chloe Fineman. Now let's go into the gaming industry world. That one's too funny too. So, as I said, let's enter the gaming world. Bethesda Q&A workers strike because who needs quality when you can have a day off? Now, this strike took over a couple weeks ago, I'll be honest. But that is Bethesda. They are now owned by Microsoft. They've been owned by Microsoft and what was that? I want to say a multi-billion dollar type buyout. But they put out some classics. They've been around since early on, some of these games. Wolfenstein, when gaming began to get popular in the early 90s. The Elder Scrolls, another classic. Fallout, one of the first visionary type games in its day that has gone to become even bigger with the new format once graphics were really upgraded. Graphics meaning they were able to do more versus the RTS, real-time strategy type layouts. And then there's obviously Doom. Doom. Oh, I'm thinking of the Indian movie, the Bollywood movie. That's Dhoom. I always think of that when I think of Doom. But then there's Starfield, and Evil Within is probably the newest one in the sense that it's a horror type thriller and detective type setup. I actually have both games. I haven't played that one yet. I do have Doom, not the latest, but the one right before that came out. Fallout. I'm a big Fallout fan. Wolfenstein, I got the Wolfenstein games. I have yet to play the last two. I just don't have a lot of time to game, but these are games that I will play. Elder Scrolls, I have never, ever, ever even thought of getting it. For one simple fact, the time investment on that game will take years. But Bethesda quality and assurance workers. So, this is funny. Quality and assurance workers go on strike. It's funny because games are more buggier than ever. So these are quiet. So they want work, more pay, more respect. Yeah, they put up crappy, buggy games. Bethesda being one of the worst. Their Fallout games, the bugs in them are incredibly bad. And that's just the way gaming works now. But the overview of the strike here. The context of the unionization efforts and the significance of the strike. It was a union formation. ZeniMax Workers United formed in early 2023, representing over 300 quality and assurance workers. It's just irony here. It's just the one of the worst aspects of gaming is its quality assurance and how bad it's lacking. So it's the first video game studio union recognized under Microsoft. Why they recognize them is the name only. They really didn't expect them to strike. Hey, we're all one. We're all woke. We're all together. There's no, we're not. The hand will eventually bite the individual that feeds it. I'm sorry, the animal will eventually bite the hand that feeds it. That's the same or something like that. But they were protesting Microsoft's outsourcing their Q&A work without negotiation. See, that's my whole point is we live in a global world, which is what they want. Well, they're gonna have to understand you can get things done cheaper in a global world. We all want to live nice and large at the expense of the consumer. We don't care about the consumer, but then we'll bitch about another industry and the prices being too high. Well, it's too high because our unions have way too much power in the sense of some of these costs are higher because of union wages and related costs up to 40%, depending on what the union, if not higher than that. And companies are saying that we get this done cheaper. China floods our market. There's got to be a balance. We want to take care of you. You want to take care of the consumer, we know, but there's going to be balance. But there's never balance because greed by human nature corrupts. And it's no different here. Maybe prove that you are quality and assurance. If you are quality and assurance people, and then they should talk. Microsoft has no reason talking to these people. It was a one-day strike held November 13th, a couple of weeks ago, as I said, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Woo! Got to have a strike from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. because I come 6 o'clock, got to go eat dinner with the family, go see friends, have my latte, you know, and I don't get up till 9:30, so it had to be from 10 to 6. So the strike occurred at four ZeniMax studios in Maryland and Texas. Some of their demands are to limit the percentage of outsourced Q&A jobs. They don't want to lose their jobs. I don't blame them. But here's where I do blame them. We need more flexible remote work policies instead of mandatory in-office attendance. Look, in-office attendance is where it's at. That's where you will gain your biggest bang for the buck. I was one of the first companies in these United States of America to use remote workers for 95% of my freelancers, employees, etc. If you wanted to work for us full time in management, you had to move out here to California. Because we're a team. We're going to help build this company. We're going to help move forward. I'm not going to have you doing that out of Maryland, out of Michigan, out of wherever the hell you're at. You're going to do it in this office, face to face. You're going to be more productive. It's shown that people who work remote takes them 15 to 18 hours to do an 8 to 10-hour job. That's not me talking. That's facts. It's the data. I need you productive in this office for a set amount of time, not at your convenience. I had one of my managers move back home. Oh, I gotta go run and take my car in. Gotta go do this. Gotta go do that. He got the work done, but not within the time scope I needed. I said, look, you need to come out here or you're fired. He was out here in 3 days. And I feel bad about that, but at the time I was so angry at him abusing us and abusing the system and not caring, thinking it was his right. I was like, no. Not the best way to handle it that I did. And I still have, I have a lot of regrets over things like that. I feel bad for how I handled them. It was very, not unprofessional, but very authoritarian. I felt like, okay, you want to play this game? Here's the rules. So maybe I shouldn't have done it like that, but it's human nature, not my part, their part. You know, they're not around the boss, they're not around the work. They take the work as a secondary, as an evil necessity. And maybe it is in your eyes, but I want you to focus on the work. So this more flexible remote work policies, that's going to create, this is quality assurance gaming. You got to be attentive. You're not attentive at home with tens of distractions. That's one reason why it takes so long to do the job from home versus at the office. So some of the statements or issues from union members expressed frustration with Microsoft repeated proposals and lack of negotiation progress. They were like, you got a contract, fulfill it. It's pretty much what they're saying. Is this a negotiation? You're not negotiating. That's our negotiation. If you don't like it. India, they highlighted the dissatisfaction with current working conditions and the necessity of striking for better terms. In the industry context and all this, look, there are significant layoffs across the gaming industry. So they're playing with fire with this. Yeah, they're concerned about their job security. Maybe do a great job and you will have it. We seem to forget the job security or the keep your job, whether you're this job or you go to your next one, is being a great worker. And I get it, outsourcing could undermine your job security. But if you're in-house QA, and you're doing a kick-ass job, they're gonna find work for you and find a place for you. People do that. They gravitate towards great workers. So Microsoft acknowledged the strike and expressed a willingness to address employee concerns at the bargaining table. They're not. And I don't blame them. So supposedly negotiations are ongoing, but they face massive roadblocks concerning remote work and outsourcing issues. Here's the biggest problem. Microsoft's Xbox Game Pass or their Game Pass, it's plateaued. Look, as your gamers age out, they realize, why am I paying $15 a month, $20 for a month, and I don't have time to play all these games? It's a great concept, maybe at a couple dollars a month, but on the flip side, gamers can develop games for anywhere from a few million to a couple hundred million and expect to subsist on a platform or a subscription service that only charges a couple bucks a month. What's going to happen is they're going to have to bring that price down and bring in older AAA games. And those AAA games are going to have to stand alone on their own to make their money back. It's called capitalism, supply and demand. I'm not going to pay $70 for a game. I'm not going to play it right away. Like I said, I mentioned it. I have Doom, Fallout, Wolfenstein and Evil Within. Those are games that are years old, some of them, years and years. And I'm going to play them. So why should I go buy? I bought Silent Hill 2, the remake, because Silent Hill is one of my most favorite games. I realize now I should have waited. They got me. Good marketing. But I have no regrets. I will play it next. So if no concessions are made, longer strikes could occur in the future. Woe is them. They're already buggy. They're saying upcoming games like Indiana Jones are not expected to be delayed due to the strike. No, wokeness is what's going to kill that game. So, in essence, this strike reflects on broader labor issues within the gaming industry, emphasizing workers' rights amid economic uncertainties. Welcome to the real world, gamers. While some progress has been made, key concerns remain unresolved, and they will remain unresolved. Even if they get more remote workers, it's just temporary. They're going to hire less and less and outsource more and more. And I'll tell you this, I work with Indian companies. They'll get the job done better than most American companies. We have this generation that we've lost a few generations with the participation trophies. And how are we paying the price? The quality work we get out to them. Who picks up the slack? People not in this country because technology allows remote working. So if I'm going to have a remote worker, I would want to pay somebody a higher than average wage to give me subpar work, but I can pay somebody at a lesser wage and get top tier work. That's just supply and demand. That's how it works. Y'all are the ones who wanted this global economy, leftists. Beware what you ask for. All right. Now let's get to some sad news. And that sad news being the death of a couple of icons in their own right. And that is Tony Todd. As you can see, You may not know the name, but you know the face. There he is in the bottom left as Candyman. Renowned actor Tony Todd, famous for his roles in Candyman. And I don't have a Final Destination image there, but he also did the Final Destination, but he was known for Candyman. He died. He was only 69. That November 6th, so it's been a little while, but I want to give my tribute to him. He's one of those recognizable faces. Did a lot, saw him in a lot. He died at his home in Marina Del Rey. And Candyman, and the reason we say Candyman is that was his movie. He was the lead. He portrayed a titular character, a vengeful spirit with a hook for a hand. That's right. And he's summoned by uttering his name five times, Candyman. The film was released in 1992. See, that's my era. That's why I'm well aware of him and what he is. And it explores the themes of urban legend, social issues. It focuses on race and violence and in the Cabrini Green housing projects of Chicago. And it is a chilly performance. And it makes the film unique. They had many sequels to it. In fact, they're having a new reboot, and I think he was going to be part of it before his passing. Yeah. And he endured real bee stings during filming. And it solidified his legacy, transformed him into a beloved horror icon, as oxymoron as that sounds. And it, like I said, it had multiple sequels and a revival of interest decades later. Like I said, they're doing another one. Todd gained fame for portraying Candyman and the sequels, but he was also in Final Destination franchise. He appeared in multiple films from 2000 to 2005. You know, actress Virginia Madsen, I think she's a beautiful woman. She starred alongside him in Candyman. She was Sorrow, you know, and that's how Hollywood goes. A lot of them come out. But I always wonder, how often, when was the last time you actually saw him? He was also in Platoon. You see that there in the bottom right. Night of the Living Dead. Recurring roles in Star Trek, The Next Generation, and Star Trek Deep Space Nine. He had over four decades of acting, over 240 films and television credits. He had a phenomenal voice, deep voice, commanding presence. That's why you couldn't forget him. He had a distinct bald head. You know, he said he had a turbulent childhood, and that fueled his performances and has shaped who he became as an actor. At the time of his passing, he was involved in many projects, actually. A new installment of Final Destination. Final Destination, Bloodline, set for release this year. So, Mr. Tony Todd, may you rest in peace. Thank you for entertaining us, and Godspeed as you begin your next glorious voyage. Because Virginia Madsen is right. Heaven has gained a new angel. Let us move on to the man, the myth, the legend, Chuck Woolery, life, legacy, and yes, controversy. There's a collage of Chuck. Chuck Woolery passed away just a couple of days ago at the age of 83. So he was older, but I mean, he still has some years left. So the cause is reported as a likely cardiac event. I wonder if it was jab, but at that age, you know, atherosclerosis, who knows what else. He lived a long life. It was confirmed by friend and podcast co-host Mark Young. Some of his career highlights. The original host of The Wheel of Fortune, 1975 to 1981. There it is on the top right. Long-running host of the Love Connection, 1983 to 94, 11 years. Host of Scrabble, 84 to 90, 6 years. Then it came back for another year, 93. That's so top right is Wheel of Fortune. Bottom right is Love Connection. Top left is Scrabble. And I don't have a picture of Greed, which he hosted on Fox from 1990 to 2000. And he hosted Lingo on the Game Show Network from 2002 to 2007. That's 5 years. But that's a picture of him as he looked his older, his later years in life. Good looking man. You know, your classic waspish guy in an era when wasps dominated everything. And I'm not saying that in a good or bad way. It's a fact of life. He was good looking, striving, good voice, very amicable, charming. So, you know, he had it all. He was known for his engaging hosting style and two catchphrase. Now, he did transition after 2007 towards political commentary. He co-founded the conservative podcast Blunt Force Truth with Mark Young in 2014, and he became increasingly vocal about conservative politics. In fact, let me show you this. This was what he said about himself and about coming out, as I said earlier in the day. Oops, I hit the wrong one. Coming out. To answer your question, yes, I have pretty much destroyed my career by openly supporting Trump and letting all know I am a conservative. Painful at times, but true. After all is said and done, it was my choice and I can live with it. I would do it all again. Powerful words. Powerful words indeed. And the reason they're powerful is I am in his same situation. I came out. I was told when I left the industry, so my company, I left the industry about 2010, 2012, whether it was people at ESPN, CBS, and other Yahoo and other places. Hey, you ever leave KFFL or ever go on your own, give us a call. None of them guaranteed me a job, but they were saying, call us. We're interested. I can't get not one of them to return a call today. I mean, look at me. I'm still a good-looking guy. I'm a good-looking veteran. I was once one of the most dominant fantasy football players in the country at one time. My company was the top fantasy football company, one of the top fantasy sports companies in the world. Now, the world has changed since DFS Daily Fantasy came out. I would have dominated that too, not myself as a player, but as a business. I was actually looking into it. I had the business plan, the partner lined up, and then just the cost just kept incrementally growing. And it went from my budget to being $16 million to shot up to 30-some-odd million. That's when I realized I can't do this because even whatever idea I bring to the table, somebody's going to own it. And they're going to dictate what they want out of it. They'll use my face, my brand, my ability to grow what they want, not what I want. So I gave up on that part. And then I went to my passion, which is politics. So when I see Chuck Woolery, something in me likes him. He did have some controversial COVID-19 statements. And I believe him. Because I agree with him. Allegation that the CDC media and doctors were lying about the pandemic. Now that the COVID studies have come out, everything from the 6-foot distancing was a lie. The mask was always a lie, but they managed to lie and say it enough. They convinced the public a mask would help, but it would not. From day one, we knew that. He claimed misinformation was politically motivated to damage Trump. And it was. It was. They say he shifted his stance after his son contracted COVID-19. I find that one hard to believe. Maybe I'm wrong. I caught COVID-19. I haven't shifted my stance. In fact, the lies killed a friend of ours, a family friend. I won't say his name, but he was put on the dreaded ventilator and died. That ventilator is what killed him. His personal life. Chuck Woolery was born in Ashland, Kentucky, served in the Navy, fellow of a Navy veteran, had a music career, including a hit song, Naturally Stoned. I like that as a Panamanian. He lost his son, Chad, in a 1986 motorcycle accident. He was married 4 times, though. Wow, that's a lot. And whenever any of those love connections were made on that show. He had 5 kids, though, so his legacy will live on. He was, again, identified as a conservative. He's actually a conservative libertarian. Kind of like where I'm at. I like some of the philosophies of libertarianism that I strive for. But libertarianism is pretty much a philosophical belief. It's not an ideological political force. And how do I know that? Since 1970, they won 1 electoral vote. They're about as useful as a 3rd nipple on a whore trying to pick a sailor up on payday. But striving to live in certain aspects is always honorable, I guess. But the truth is I'm more conservative because that's more of a political ideology you can actually get behind and see and put in play to better not only the individual, but America, where libertarianism is purely individually based. And Democrats, well, they've got full-blown progressive communism, socialism, whatever you want to call it. They are the party of the KKK. They are the party of Jim Crow. They are the party that voted to keep women from voting. They are the party that voted against the Civil Rights Act. What they are the party of? Marketing 101. The greatest marketing con job ever pulled in the history of American politics is when they got every black individual to go from Republican to Democrat. still exists today. And the blacks and minorities who are also on what I call the Democrat plantation, they're all doing well. They don't care. They can afford the high prices of everything. They live in their own guarded communities, whether it's a nice hotel or apartment complex, condo complex in the city, or a big old house in the suburbs, or a bigger house in the rural area. And they'll tell you, got to keep voting Democrat while your life is miserable. Those are facts. Why do I say they're facts? Because I can back every one of those points up. That's a debate for another day on a different podcast. So he faced significant public backlash, as I have. So that's why I like him or liked him. He was inducted into the American TV Game Show Hall of Fame in 2007. And he did leave a lasting mark on the game show genre. Look at Wheel of Fortune, he was the first host. He left in a contract dispute. He saw how popular it was. Maybe he tipped his hand too early. You know, because Pat Sajak owes his whole career and life to Chuck Woolery leaving that. He's remembered as both a beloved entertainer and, yes, to people on the left who enjoyed him as a host, polarizing political commentator. To me, he spoke truth. His final years, he continued podcasting his political commentary, maintained strong conservative viewpoints, and remained active in public discourse until his death. Mr. Chuck Woolery, God rest your soul and Godspeed as you begin what I know you feel was an upcoming monumental journey of ridding the chains and weight of your earthly form. Much love and respect. And you are on your journey that we will all take one day. I only hope I can continue to live the life you live, the American dream, and helping others while you're at it. Let us move on. Let's end this on a fun note. It's not a dark episode, but it's been a pretty heavy episode. I mean, what have we talked about? The deaths of Tony Todd, Chuck Woolery, a strike that makes nobody happy, activists destroying ancient artifacts, and a woke girl crying and whining because somebody didn't like her skin. So let's end it on a happier note. Bagheera unmasked, a bold new hero in Kannada film genre. These are Indian films. And I am going to talk about Bagheera. Let me show you something here. This is Bagheera. The guy in the top left, that's the actor who plays him. The middle top picture is Bagheera. And that's the guy who turns into a Batman-esque type individual, only darker, more vicious, more violent. I'd put my money on him over Batman. And there's the actor again in the role. He's got that strong man look. I mean, you see the picture there. It's just a very strong looking actor playing a strong character. So this is what I call our movie review segment. I have been watching more movies from the Far East and from India, I guess technically India is Asian, than I do American movies. We are, the toxism of hating masculinity is in full gear. Men literally are pajama boys. Men will not fight a 98-pound woman. I'm sorry, that came out wrong. Men will lose to a 98-pound woman because Hollywood dictates in the script they're going to beat you up, man. I don't care if you're 250 pounds. No, that's not how real life works. Men cater to women. Men have been emasculated in Hollywood. And Hollywood wonders why their movies don't make money. Well, when you're emasculated in a patriarchal society, that's going to happen. You want some masculinity? Watch movies, Asian movies. So today we're exploring the 2024 again. Kannada film Bagheera, bold entry into the superhero genre. It is directed by Dr. Suri and penned by Prajhan Neel of KGF fame. For those of you who aren't aware, KGF is a big time movie that came out of the Kannada film industry, that part of India. And I don't know too much about it. I'm still learning myself. But One of the biggest hits was called KGF. Came out a couple years ago. It's a crime syndicate movie set in the 70s. Who's hugely popular, big money maker on their level. It had a sequel, KGF 2, but that kind of started it. So that's why you see a lot of comparisons. Now this film, Bagheera, introduces a regional superhero to Indian cinema. And it's hardcore. Came out October 31st. I saw it on Netflix. You know, there's one theater. I don't even know if it's still in existence. I haven't gone there since pre-COVID. Last movie I saw was Doom, D-H-O-O-M 3, Doom 3 there. So, but it was the only theater that played Indian movies. And this movie, Bagheera, the main cast is Sri Murali, Rukmini, and Vusun. Sri Murali is, as I showed you, the lead guy, actor, a handsome guy, not built like a Schwarzenegger, all buff and muscle, top of muscles, but a thickly built guy who is epitomizes strength when you see his character. And Rukmini, I think that's the female lead. And then there's Vusun. No, Ruk. Oh, gosh, I forget this. Hold on 1 second. Let me try. I'm trying to remember. And I'm sitting here thinking. It's Rukmini Vusun. That's her full name. Some of these actors have one name. They tend to be the male lead. Anyway, she plays the female lead. And they could have developed a little bit better. But she did a great role in her, a great job in her role. So the movie Bagheera, to me, it left a very strong impression. The music is powerful. It's your classic good versus evil storyline. The energy from the soundtrack, it was memorable. It kind of gave you goosebumps the way it was integrated into the movie. So what's the plot? It's a gripping tale of justice and retribution with a clear distinction between the forces of good versus evil. And the pacing keeps you engaged throughout. I mean, Indian movies have to have good pacing. You're talking 2.5 to 3 hour long movies. The main characters are well developed with oh gosh, how do you pronounce it? Sri Murali. He does deliver a standout performance as a protagonist, and Rukmini also shines in her role. Dr. Suri, the director, he did a good job. He brought a classic good versus evil theme to life in a very dystopian set world. And so I love the execution. It's innovative and it's consistent with the genre. It's consistent with the fact this story has been told over and over and over, yet he made it innovative enough. He brought humor to it, seriousness, and he brought a violence that we don't see in superhero movies here in the States. The cinematography was stunning. It captured the intensity and drama of the story, the use of the lighting and the special effects, and Indian special effects are improving yearly. So the overall experience was great from that perspective. But the showcase of this movie was the soundtrack. The movie is a highlight of the film. It has tracks like, how do you say this? Rudy Ra Dara, which is the main movie. It's like, I think of these demons, the angels, paw, 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 playing as good versus evil, take on each other. And you'll hear it here. I'm popping the trailer here in a second. So it energizes the audience and it adds an emotional impact to the scenes. And the song that when it says truth, honor, justice, it brings back the innermost innocence of being a child and viewing that world simplistically. It helps us understand the true meaning of these words, which we often lose faith in as we become adults because we see how corrupt the world really is and how it's not that simple. It's not that black and white. And this brings the excitement that even for a moment in a movie, you believe, you know, it's fake, even as you're watching it. But in that moment, you're like, yeah. Yeah. So the movie does explore again themes of justice, courage, and the fight against evil. And it resonates in today's world because we see this world dying, becoming more and more dystopian. One reason Obama won by the numbers he did with the first election, second election, not too sure about some of those numbers, but as 2020 proved, but is that he gave people false hope. He was like the evil in this movie. He gave false hope. People thought they were going to get something that I and many others knew Obama would never deliver. And then he was just flat out lying. But he gave that hope. So that's what makes this movie so good, though, is that hope. You know, you have that hope. So. The dialogue, the script's well written. I'm lying. I don't know. I don't speak any of the languages, so somebody else is gonna have to talk about dialogue. I always worry about the subtitles. In gaming and in manga, there's been it's a whole freaking it's not even conspiracy, it's been proven. Leftists who do this translation, they lean it towards leftists. Some of the subtitles have nothing to do with what's being said. It's finally come out. So, in fact, it's gotten to the point some of these gaming companies or some of these manga companies are using AI for their interpretation. So, Bagheera follows Vidan, an idealistic police officer played by Raleigh. I'm sorry, Shrimu Rali, who becomes disillusioned by systemic corruptions. And so the fight injustice, he transforms into Bagheera, mass vigilante. Let's show you the video. So you saw the Superman and the kid there, and he's inspired as a child by superheroes. But Mama Sun says, no, superheroes are in everyday real life. In real life, superheroes don't have powers. In real life, people like your dad, a policeman, are heroes. Ergo, why he becomes a policeman. Now there you have it all, right there. You got the music, boom, 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 boom. And then you have the power of the guy, or he puts it on, and it just brings out the kid in you. Like, yeah, that's so cool, man. Then you got the violence. Yeah, you get him, So, but it's the music. What you don't realize, it's the music driving you. I'm gonna talk a little bit more about the music here and why it's so important. Right there, the way he's walking. Again, it brings out the kid in you. If you're an adult, you're going to enjoy the movie as much as your child. Now, the sad thing is, we're American, so we can't. You can't take your little kid who doesn't know how to read to this. He's not going to get it. Take your teenage son, though. It's a great bonding experience if you brought him up in a way where you guys do connect. Or even if you don't connect, but you have the same interests. Don't take him if your kid's a thug. Yeah, I mean, he's not going to care for the movie. But for the average suburban kid, rural kid in the city life, but somebody who's living off of looking to make their way through drugs and through crime, they're not going to enjoy the movie. It's just a sad fact. But maybe it can help change him. Maybe as a father who's struggling with your kid on that, but the action is there. I mean, just that scene there alone there. It's a very powerful movie. Very powerful movie. So that's the trailer I found. And the song is incredible. I went out and I bought the soundtrack. I have a few soundtracks from Indian movies that I've come to enjoy. So the narrative unfolds in 8 chapters. Before we get to that, though, on what I just said, yes, it is an over-the-top take. But remember, movies are escapes in the fantasy. I got in an argument with my professor. I took 2 courses of films. I know how to write a screenplay. Don't never never done it. Everything's formulaic. And I took a couple courses. And then I had to remind her, she was a leftist, woke lefty, the artsy fartsy movie, you're supposed to do this. I raised my hand and I said, movies. And I was not asking. I was addicted. I was a 28-year-old kid. Got in out of the Navy. I was not your average 18, 19 year old. So I did not. So when I raised my hand, I spoke. I didn't ask. I said, movies were created during the Depression era when they became uber popular for people to escape the doldrums of their miserable lives in that time, in that terrible time our country endured. They weren't meant for you. They weren't meant for directors or actors to be artsy fartsy. And I use that term, artsy fartsy. And she said, careful. I said, no, that's what I'm saying is fact. That's what movies are meant to do, to escape. I'll speak to you after class. And with these professors, when I was a return student, she was not the first one. I got into issues with three of them. One, the business director, and it was a professor, the guy in charge. He got mad that they refused to call him a doctor. And I said, you know, titles are earned. Maybe yours was given, but for me to respect it, you need to respect me, and you're not. So I have no reason to show you respect. I got an A in the course we were arguing about. Why they wanted me to get the hell out of Dodge? They're like, dude, this guy's more than we can handle. Why? Because I was right. Every other issues are better, we're right. As I did with this professor. Movies are an escape. If you want realism, that's fine. God bless you. I like that too. But when I'm watching certain movies, I just want over the top. Fun, masculinity, superhero. Yeah, hear me roar. I'm a fucking man. So it is over the top. But it just brings out the hope in you that there is truth, honor, and justice still out there somewhere to be found by somebody who is in the power to make change. So this narrative unfolds in the 8 chapters. With the second chapter, Verdath becomes Bagheera, starts his transformation. To me, it was a great way where they balance action, emotional depth, and Bagheera in terms of using the lighting, the powerful music, the violence to kind of just engross you and take you into this. Sri Murali, is that how you say his name? Sri Murali. He delivers a very compelling performance as both the cop, Vedant, who gets corrupted there, and which is why he turned into Bagheera, but he has to play a role. And it showcases both his physical prowess and emotional rage. And like I said, he's not one of these super cut guys. He's just your well-built, everyday, working-class man, physically speaking. And, you know, the woman, Rukmini Vusunth, she did a good job. And I'm not going to give anything away, but she plays a central role there at the end. And they could have done a better job in showing it, developing it. When I started doing a bit of research after I saw it, I think there may be different versions of the movie that have been released based on what part of the world you're at. So I don't know, but I thought they could have developed that a little bit better. The action sequences and stunts are well done. Well done. One of the worst movies, two movies you'll see in action sequences in terms of the actual physical fighting are The Matrix 2 and 3. There is no power behind them. More like dance scenes. And it's cool with the CGI and all that, but the actual power behind the fighting is not there. This one brings that to life. Some of the tropes, yeah, he beats up on multiple opponents at once. It's more like WWE, takes a pounding and comes up unscathed. Again, it's a fantasy, you know? Again, the cinematography captures a brooding atmosphere suitable for a vigilante story. The nighttime scenes do effectively convey mystery and danger. And again, the music and sound. The music was done by B.I. Janish Loknath, who scored some of the key moments with the music. The background score does stand out. Now, I want to bring up, Clint Eastwood is a superstar. He became a superstar in the 60s. He's going to die a superstar. That's never before been done in terms of longevity of how long he's been able to do that. Oh, my God. What 40, 50, 60, over 70 years there. His most memorable movies are his 3 spaghetti westerns. Why? It's the music. Sergio de Leon, one of the greatest unheralded actors. I mean, we know his name because of the spaghetti westerns, but he'll never go down as an Alfred Hitchcock and Steven Spielberg, but he's up there with him. Where Jaws is dated. Encounters of the Third Kind is dated. George Lucas will be remembered for the Star Wars trilogy more so than Spielberg. But so will Sergio de Leon. Why the music? He would have his actors hold poses for the music. You got to hold it because the music's this long, that long. And we were hooked. And that's what this movie does. The energy intertwined into the scene has you again engrossed. And obviously, as I already said, this explores themes of justice, corruption, vigilantism. And it resonates with the local issues, I guess, you're going through there. But those local issues transcend worldwide. Now, the reception of the movie, it's a box office success. I looked it up. I couldn't really tell how big a success, but it is. And I found Bagheera to be an admirable effort at creating a local superhero film for them. You know, I found Christian Bale's Batman to be some of the weakest, worst Batmans I've ever seen. Again, they were color by numbers. The fight scenes weren't very realistic, weren't very good. They were kind of silly, to be quite frank. And I thought it was overblown. It made a lot of money because it's Batman. I found the newer Batman much better than his. So I recommend this for fans of action-packed stories that love that superhero flair. If you like films like KGF, which I have started watching, or Solar, which I have watched and I will be reviewing here soon, you'll love Bagheera. So in my research, I found two movies I want to watch: Ugram or Mufti, one of those two. Maybe they're one of the same. I always get confused. They change names sometimes. As I said, I just started watching KGF. It's Solar. We'll be ready for review probably post-holidays here, as in post-Thanksgiving. So this is a great father and son bonding movie, and it's on Netflix. Grab some popcorn. Let the girls go out. Keep the son in, and you too will enjoy it. I give it a thumbs up or a 4 out of 5. Like I said, they could have developed the female lead there a bit more, but it's a rarity in the power of the score drawing you into the flick. And there you have it, Bagheera, a must-see movie. My name is William Del Pilar. Do not forget to like, share, and most importantly, subscribe to this podcast. You can find this podcast and others like it, including Fired Up, my conservative talk podcast, and my points on the board, the intersectionality of politics and sports, also, as well as our other podcasts at grumblingsmedia.com, as well as YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, and Pandora, under the profile handle Grumblings Media. Again, my name is William Del Pilar. This is the Red, White, and Rude. Until next time, I bid you adieu.